My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Welcoming Evan Ellis, Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American Research Professor, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Welcoming him back from his travels, especially to Peru, noting that this is the 24th year since the attack on New York and Washington. We acknowledge it. We all know where we were. However, too many villains, too little time. We go immediately to Peru with the professor. The last time the professor and I had an opportunity to talk, given how many crises there have been in the Americas, China had completed a very large deep water port for itself, controlling itself in Peru. At the same time, the government, which was never elected, it acceded to the present government, Balardé, when they jailed the elected governor, Castillo. The government remains extremely unpopular, but Peru is a critical component for the success of the Americas. So, Professor, welcome back. Your time in Peru was well spent to give us an understanding of how a country is functioning with a president who is so unpopular, with a former president or an impeached president in jail, and what you'd have to say is complicated and non-transparent relations with our adversary, the People's Republic of China. So let's begin with the government. Elections, when and if they're due, will that release the pressure that everyone's under because the approval rating is so low? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. It's good to be back and to be with you again. And Peru is really a very strategically important nation of multiple stories. It, of course, is located on the central Pacific coast of South America, a very large country. But that location also makes it of strategic importance to the Chinese, both in terms of this new major deepwater port, which will be the largest port, a hub port not only in the Pacific coast of South America, but possibly transformative in terms of allowing the Chinese company Costco to dominate the value added of trans-Pacific trade. But more broadly, also, Peru is a country that is deep in mineral resources. There are seven major PRC mining operations in the country, as well as some oil wealth and other things. But beyond the relationship with China, which is substantial, Peru also has multiple different challenges. One of which has long been organized crime. Peru has been a producer of the coca for cocaine, although a lot of what is produced in Peru goes either southeast through Bolivia or out to the Pacific coast to oftentimes destinations in Europe with Mexican groups, as well as European groups, even the Albanian mafia, operating in a representational capacity there. But with the organized crime and with Peru's also other difficult legacies, what you also have politically is a high level of corruption, high level of representation. So you have a president, Dina Boluarte, who is at least nominally center left, but who has actually aligned herself with the right to stay in office. And because she, frankly, is perceived by many as doing very little to actually address the nation's problems, her popularity has just plummeted. She literally is polling right now 2 to 3% popularity, by far the least popular president in all of South America. The elections are coming up in April of 2026. There are something like 40 different candidates. So there's a question of who on the right or on the left. One of the biggest blocks politically is those affiliated with the daughter of former President Alberto Fujimori. But that block is strong enough, it seemed, to get to the first round of the presidential elections. But oftentimes what has happened in the past is that that block is not enough to get the daughter of Fujimori, Keiko Fujimori, elected. And so oftentimes what has happened is the person who makes it to the second position in that first round of the election, oftentimes it ends up becoming president. That's how Pedro Castillo became president last time around. I should also mention that in this very fragmented political situation, you also have a very fragmented Congress. You have parties from the far right. You have centrist parties, some very transactional parties. You have the remnants of a number of different parties on the far left, one with the backing of Vladimir Cerrón, a Cuba-trained communist physician who is the one that brought Pedro Castillo to power. Although Cerrón himself and the former president who is now in jail, Pedro Castillo, is their popularity has diminished. But you still have this vast group of people from the Peruvian interior, the mountains and the jungle regions of Peru, who have oftentimes felt neglected by the more elitist politics of Lima. And so the question of, which group or groups capture the imagination with them. And so, again, what you have is a situation in which this strategically important country with deep economic ties to China, including but not limited to Chiang Kai and in mining, has a fragmented political situation in which virtually anything could happen as we approach the April 2026 elections, and also immersed in deep problems of organized crime and deep problems in corruption that have also foster a certain unpredictability of how politics are going.
Are the Chinese businesses evident in the capital?
Absolutely. One of the elements of Peru's past is that Lima, which back in the days of Spanish colonialism and in immediately after that, was one of the destinations as in the 19th century and early 20th century, the Chinese last empire, the Manchu dynasty, collapsed. And so to this day, you have a very large Chinese ethnic population. They use the word Tucson in Peru for those who are ethnically Chinese. And so you see ethnically Chinese faces, largely who speak, if they speak any Chinese dialects at all, it's Cantonese or Hakka, in not necessarily Mandarin. They've beyond the ethnic Chinese, and indeed the integration of a Chinese culture into Peruvian culture, they have a Chinese Peruvian food mix, which is a very traditional part of Peru, which they call chifa, just to kind of illustrate that cultural integration. But beyond the cultural piece, again, you have longstanding deep commercial ties. I mentioned before in the mining sector, in the petroleum sector, going back to 1993, the Chinese are involved in a number of different highway projects. They've captured a substantial portion of the control of the electricity distribution sector. They have a strong role in the telecommunications sector with the usual Chinese suspects, Huawei and ZTE and other minor players like Xiaomi and Oppo and Honor playing significant roles. And of course, in the middle of this, you also, of course, have Costco, the Chinese logistics giant, and this transformative port. And also, frankly, some talks about linking the port to a railroad, which would connect into the interior of Brazil, which probably would bring more benefit to the Brazilians and the Chinese operating Costco than it would be to the Peruvians. But these mega projects are all really the subject of hopes of Peruvians. And then at the end of the day, the questions of are the Peruvians having strong enough governance and making good enough decisions to be able to transform these hopes into actually realizing development from the port for themselves? Or will that development and control of Chiang Kai largely benefit the Chinese operators?
The reason I ask, Professor, is because the MO of Chinese state security is to start with the diaspora and recruit in the diaspora in order to have favorable opinion in country. That's why I ask about Peru.
There are signs that there is, major influence operations, both in the diaspora and also with a number of other business actors, given that they have long established companies there. And so you find there's a friendship committee in the Peruvian Congress whose leadership travels regularly over to China. You have, among media people, a number of different leading figures who travel regularly over to China and who are pro-Chinese. You have the China-Peru Chamber of Commerce called CAPECHI that, again, is very pro-China, is seen as another kind of source for business-level influence reflecting United Front activities. And so definitely while Peru, on the one hand, does align itself culturally with the United States in many ways. And when I talked to Foreign Minister Schaller, he was very clear that, Peru continues to wish to pursue that path. However, you do see that web of influence that goes through the diaspora, that goes through the business community, that goes through Congress, that goes through the media is very strong. As a matter of fact, literally all of the major Peruvian, or at least most of the major Peruvian newspapers, the official newspaper El Peruano, others such as El Comercio, just signed a content sharing agreement with Xinhua. Another one called The Republic is very pro-China and has content sharing agreements with Xinhua. So in all phases, far beyond just business, you do see that influence and that struggle for where Peru goes politically.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, just back from Peru. I'm John Batchelor.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly.